There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Friday. Glad to have y'all along. And, of course, phone line and the text line open for you, 343-0106. And if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but you can also leave us one of those talk back messages. If you'll, on the front page where it's streaming there, you'll see a microphone icon. If y'all push that, it records a message, emails it to us right here at the station. So check that out. All right, I mentioned as we opened the show today, last hour, I said hour number two. Super excited about a conversation about not just a big alligator gar, but a really big alligator gar, and a great story to go on with it. And it's a real treat. I think when I saw this was not long after Thanksgiving, and I sent some messages to Keith Dees about this fish he and his son out on a late November fishing trip caught. And you know what? It's to my fault that I have not gotten him on earlier. He's now, well, Keith joins us now. I see you in Newsweek. I see you in publications around the country. You're going to go global. This fish has gone global, man. Welcome aboard. Thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's this is crazy, man, to have a fish out there and... And for it to be a Newsweek and Fox News, it's just bizarre.
It's funny, though, the stuff that, and I was going to say things that we all as outdoorsmen down here think are regular, but we don't on this because this is an exceptional fish. But yeah, you get people from other parts of the country, they say, oh, holy cow, look at that beast. I mean, a small alligator gar looks big and scary as it is. When you catch one the size that y'all did, then, well, it gets a lot of attention. A lot of people look at that and go, what is that crazy fish? I mean, tell us about, first of all, the superlatives on this. How big is this gar? How big was the one y'all caught?
He was 84 and a half inches long, so a little over 7 feet, and 35 and a half inches around. So his girth was nearly 36 inches, which I'm not a gar expert. I think whenever you first reached out to me, I said, hey, I'm not a gar expert, but
it's huge.
You know, the girth of that fish just blew me away.
I mean, he could wear a pair of 36 Carhartt jeans and they fit him just right.
Absolutely. I mean, bigger around than a basketball. I think a basketball is 34 inches, so that tells you just how big around he was.
Wow. And over 7 foot long, I mean, like I said, even a small gar looks big, and they look like a dinosaur kind of fish. And when they get that big, they kind of are. Any idea how old this gar was? Anybody sampled it?
No, it's the fish is actually still frozen in a friend's walk-in freezer, and my understanding from talking to Tommy Purcell, who is a wildlife fisher, is no definitive way to understand exactly how old that fish is. Once they get a certain age, they start, you know, it's really difficult. It's like aging deer. You're good till a few years, and then it gets really hard after that.
Yeah, between like 8 and 9, you know, you can get from 2.5 to 4.5, but then if he's 8 or 9 or 10, you don't know, kind of thing.
That's right. And the same thing. I mean, that fish could be 30 years old or 70 years old. You know, there's really no way to know.
Holy cow. Well, I love this setup because I mean, it's a story about a tradition and spending time with your kids. But it's also, you know, people would say, well, somebody who breaks the record, and you just said you don't know anything about them. I would say, no, somebody breaks the record is an alligator gar specialist. This is what you've done your whole life, Keith, is fish for alligator gar. that wasn't the plan that day in the Delta.
No, it wasn't. And that's the cool thing about, you know, the Delta is that, you know, we've caught jack crevalle bass fishing, of course, redfish, black grub, all that stuff. And I've caught some alligator gar over the years, bass fishing. I grew up on the Tom Big Beach. You know, we would catch them running jugs or trunk lines or, you know, things like that as a kid growing up. But never anything close to this size. And, yeah, that's a tradition we have. I don't know, 7-8 years. And every year, I guess 5 or 6 years ago, we had a trip on Thanksgiving morning. It was brutally cold, set up for one of those perfect fall trout days. I know you love those too.
Yep.
And literally from daylight when we stopped, I put my power poles down and we doubled and tripled for, you know, 6 hours. And it's like, nothing's ever going to top this Thanksgiving trip.
Right. Yeah, no joke.
And then this happens.
Yeah, little did you know when you said that. I mean, describe this when you hook this fish. I mean, you're not fishing. I mean, you're fishing regular bass or trout tackle, right? I mean, you're throwing a, you know, you're not rigged up for a 7-foot fish.
No, I was throwing a 7-foot, you know, medium action bass rod, typical. You know, throw a chatterbait down there a lot of times in the fall, 15 pounds, single fluorocarbon, normal. You know, just 200 size loose bass reel, nothing crazy. And I think if the water's not in the 50s, this never happens because the fish would have had so much energy.
Right, right.
To be able to fight so much harder and not act maybe the way that he did then. But, you know, it's fun. I'm a bass fisherman. I've fished tournaments. Been fortunate to fish a lot of places, but you know, it's cool to go out and just catch a fish. You know, I love, the only thing I've ever researched a state record on is a redfin pickerel, and probably a lot of people don't even know what they are. That's a, you know, Washington County fish, and mm-hmm. that's probably the only thing I've ever thought about, hey, I might chase that record. So to do this and then have it happen, whether it had been a record or not, just the memory of my son was worth the price of admission, as they say.
Hey, I mean, you're bass fishing. Yeah, you're throwing. I think you're throwing a chatterbait, right?
Yeah,
you're throwing chatterbait trying to catch bass there. And I think I saw a quote. What was it? Tell us. I mean, like, because you didn't. Did you know you had the fish hooked? Because you, I mean, it, your line went slack or something. Then you see a fish swim by. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm real long, and, you know, redfish a lot of times, or chatterbait in general, they eat it from behind. And so a lot of times your line goes slack, you know, you lose that vibration of the bait that it's given. And that's kind of what happened. And so, you know, I just start reeling real fast, trying to catch up to the fish, whatever it is. And I kind of catch a glimpse of a fish going by my trolling motor. And I didn't really think a whole lot about it at the time. It definitely didn't look 7 foot long when it went by, but, you know, as my line kind of gets taut and it's pulling away from me, I'm going, that was the fish that I had hooked. And, so we just kind of followed it around for probably 30 minutes. You know, those jackhammers are about $20 a piece. So I was like, I just want my bait back.
You want your lure back. Yeah.
And then as we follow it along a little bit, and then finally it comes up for a gulp of air, you know, if you've been on the water a lot, you see those gar, and both end do it a lot too, grill do it a lot too, where they mm-hmm. come up and get a gulp of air. And he comes up and gets this gulp of air. I'm like, holy cow, not only is the gar, it's a big gar. I still had no idea it was even close to, you know, being 162 pounds.
It's 7 feet long. I mean, golly. So, I mean,
yeah.
So y'all, and then you get to, I mean, I guess it's maybe even better, though, that you don't know its record book status because you probably gotten a little nervous at that point.
Yeah, I mean, we just followed around, you know, the whole time my son and I, we're laughing and joking, you know, if we can get this thing in the boat, nobody's ever going to believe we caught this, you know. And probably 2 hours in, we finally get the fish, you know, tired enough where we can kind of just pull the boat up and it just swims along. And I thought, man, how in the world are we ever going to get this fish in the boat? And, you know, I've alligator hunted a good bit on the Delta over the years, and I thought maybe if we use one of those techniques where we kind of can get the boat up, get the fish up, and smell a big hook on a flipping stick and get a you know, use it kind of like a gaff, we might have a chance to lasso with this fish. And that's what we did, got him up. And a tow rope is not good to lasso a fish, for the record, because it floats.
Duly noted. So
that was quite an adventure.
It's tough to get it under that gar's chin if the line's floating.
Yeah. And stay away from those rows of teeth that are in that.
Yeah, y'all, there's if you hadn't seen alligator gar, let alone the one that Keith caught, they call them alligator gar for a reason. And they got some chompers for sure. That's the thing. How lucky were you that the way you hooked that fish? Because, I mean, if there had been line in his mouth, it would have been done and over with in a second.
Yeah, it's, to hook it on the outside and you know, it not, even though the fish are really armored, you know, they're not, as far as I know, don't have any sharp spots on them. They have really, really thick slime coat on it. So that helped a lot. And there's just so many things that had to go right to happen. You know, I think I told somebody in one of the articles, you know, any other day, you've been out there in the fall in around Runamuck Island up through there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, heck, on Tuesday, I was trout fishing before, and I mean, you can almost step boat to boat through there. And if that's the case on Thanksgiving Day or the day we hooked this fish, that doesn't happen, because we'd have been all in everybody else's anchor ropes and trolling motors and everything else going in a circle.
Yeah, you had to have some space to work. Did y'all generally time it from the time that the fish hit the chatterbait to the time y'all rolled them into the boat? How long was that?
About 2.5 hours.
Phew, man, that's a full fight there. And you say, I mean, he just eventually gave up, right? He just got tired enough to get that rope on
him. I think the cold water, you know, and the fact that the fish never went to deep water. I mean, he stayed in 2 to 4 foot of water 90% of the time that I had the fish hooked, and never ventured out to go into, you know, the deep hole out there in the middle of the river that's, you know, 16, 18 feet deep.
Yeah.
He wanted to stay on that big bar, and that's what he did.
And 2 hours plus later, you get him. So let's talk about a couple things. Number one, what's next? Because you have unfortunately, I've not been in the position you're in. I don't have a record book fish. So what do you do? How do you have to get certified? You go before what do you do here?
So I didn't, you know, first thing I did when I caught the fish was call the game warden and said, can I keep it?
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time I had to call him back after we waited on some friends' deer scales, and it was significantly over the existing record. You know, I called him back. I said, hey, man, I'm sorry to call you on Thanksgiving again, but I think I got a record. and so started reaching out, and he said, well, you got to have it certified, weighed, and then you've got to have the fish inspected and signed off on by a fisheries biologist. And it's Thanksgiving, so that creates a whole other list of challenges.
Yeah, they're busy.
We start going, and Mr. Frank Dickey, who's from Chatham, Alabama, who has set the redfin pickerel record and then broke his own record, he had heard about the fish Thanksgiving Day, and Thanksgiving night he got in touch with me, and he said, hey, here's what you got to do. You got to have some certified scale. You got to have witnesses, and then you have to have this fish signed off on it. So there's good and bad of social media. The great part of social media is I had a lot of people reach out to me and go, hey, here's where I think you can weigh the fish. You know, I had a friend of mine, a boat captain in Orange Beach, that the only place that's going to be able to weigh a fish that big is Orange Beach Marina or the wharf. And so, you know, we loaded up the next morning, put the fish in the bed of my truck in a tarp, and bought a bunch of ice, iced him down, headed to Orange Beach, and had him weighed. Once he did officially break the record, I called Tommy and said, hey, I've weighed it, got official weight. Can you meet me on inspect it? And, you know, he met me at Wildlife and Fisheries on the Friday after Thanksgiving. That afternoon, came out and inspected the fish and signed off the paperwork. And so we from there had it notarized by Wildlife and Fisheries the following Monday, sent in to Montgomery Wildlife and Fisheries. They go through their due diligence. Then officially certified as a record. So
it's quite
a lot of paperwork. I didn't realize how much paperwork and how many steps have to be gone through. But it's quite a diligent process.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, because there's only so many of y'all that set the record. Not a bunch of us know that. So, you know, to hear it, that's not going to keep me if I ever get lucky enough to make whatever record. If I catch a long-eared sunfish, I'll go through the process as well and do it. But it's quite the story. Now, of course, the question is going to be, you know where I'm going here. What's next? What are you going to do? I'm sure this fish has to become furniture somewhere, right? It's going to become get some taxidermy done.
Yeah, I finally found someone who would mount the fish down in Florida, and I told my wife, she's like, where are we going to put a 7-foot long fish? And I said, baby, all the kids' pictures are coming off of the couch. That's where that's going. that's a little bit of a challenge right now in my house.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's one thing to, you know, get a new bass and put that on the wall, but when you're trying to figure out 7 feet worth of fish and where to put that, but I'm glad you're getting it mounted, and obviously, congratulations on the record. And I think the undercurrent here, too, is the beauty of tradition and the beauty of, you were there, that happened because of a tradition with your son and being on the Delta.
Right.
You know, that's pretty special.
It absolutely is. Whether it, you know, I thought the fish was 80 to 100 pounds. You know, my son is the one who pushed for us to, you know, go weigh this fish, mainly so we would be able to tell the story. I mean, that was the whole reason for going to weigh the fish. It wasn't that we thought we had a state record at the time, and you know, but that doesn't happen if you don't one go enjoy the Delta. The Delta, I've been fortunate to fish a lot of places across the country, and the Delta is without a doubt one of the most special places that I've ever been. Obviously, growing up here, you know, and from one end of it to the other. But the other thing is just being there with my son. I had a friend of mine call me this morning, and he said, "Man, this is so cool." And it's like, but the thing I got out of it was the tradition of going fishing with your son. And if there's one thing that comes out of it, I hope, you know, we have the tradition. I hope that my son, and my daughters have grandkids, I can have a tradition with them, but I hope that someone, you know, goes out, enjoys the Delta, because you never really know what's going to happen on the Delta.
That is for sure. Yeah, and you may end up, you know, having a great time with family and friends, and on occasion come home with a new record alligator gar. Keith, this is real special, and congratulations on, I know the attention's a lot, and it's a lot to deal with on social media, but man, it's you're a great ambassador for the Delta and our area. There's people seeing your fish and your story all over, you know, all over the world, actually, with the web, but all over our country. So, thank you.
No problem. Anything, you know, like I said, if this draws attention to the Delta and the special side of it, and, you know, that's the biggest thing I would like to see out of this is the Delta's a special place, and I hope more people get out and enjoy it.
Well said, Keith. Well said. Thank you, man. Thanks for being on the show with us. And, yeah, when you get that, all the kids' pictures and everything moved off the wall and that fish mounted in the house, you send me a picture of that?
It may be a temporary picture, but I will definitely get you a picture.
Yeah, I won't tell your wife. You just take that picture and then send it to me. Keith Thies, thank you so very much, and congratulations again.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, coming right back, more Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Now look, another day, another White House briefing underway. A very cute but misguided Corinne Jean-Pierre having to pass along BS from the administration. Who wants that job? Once again, who wants that job? Could not do it. All right, 128 FM Talk 106.5. I went late, but that's fine because I was talking to Keith and we're talking about the record alligator gar. What a story. And a story of tradition and, you know, doing stuff in the Delta, which obviously I grew up the same way. Big fan of that. Oh, I wanted to give you a heads up, too, on Moon Pie Minute. You know, we just had Moon Pie Minute run. If you can go through our Facebook page, but you can also go directly to the FM Talk 106.5 website, which is fmtalk1065.com. How about that? And if you want to get podcasts, like you want to share that interview with Keith about that alligator gar, or you want to go check out the Moon Pie Minute, if you want to go binge and get yourself up to the minute here, you know, start back, because I guess we're now a week. Yeah, we've had seven, so we started last Friday. This is a weekend Moon Pie Minute. You can go catch up with where we are. And of course, Moon Pie Minute runs on Saturdays and Sundays as well. It runs every day the whole way through Ash Wednesday. The story of Mardi Gras, as told by Stephen McNair, you can go check that out through our website. Just click the tab for Moon Pie Minute, or you can go to any of the podcast platforms you already go to for all the other stuff we do, and get those there as well. So check them out, Moon Pie Minute. And yeah, we're just a fevered pitch building as we head into Mardi Gras. All right, coming right back. Calls and texts. Yeah, we'll take those. 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
So 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile Friday style. Want y'all to say hello to my friend Angelo at Mobile Bank Coins and Fine Jewelry. And not the home of the $1 trillion coin, but the home of the knowledge that's deeper than a $1 trillion coin. Hey, Angelo.
Hey, man. Yeah, I was thinking about it. I don't think we have a trillion coins, but it sure seems like we have a lot of them. But you're right. No $1 trillion coins. We're not going to do that BS, but we do have some pretty cool stuff here.
You do indeed. First of all, I want to get into the coins, but then let's kind of set the market. How's it looking this week on gold and silver? What have the prices done?
Been holding pretty steady. Gold's hovering around $1,900 an ounce. Silver is hovering in the $2,350, $2,375 an ounce range. So, you know, a little less than 24. It had actually dropped a little bit from where it was a week or two ago. So gold had run and caught up and surpassed where it's been. So they stabilized a little bit. That's woke a lot of people up. You know, gold going over 1900 made a lot of people go, whoa, we better do something right now before it gets even higher. So because of all of that, we've had a pretty busy week here.
Yeah, and the other part of this that you've taught me over time, whether it's silver or gold, you got the raw, that spot price on just that gold, just that silver. But there's like a hedge or a multiplier effect to look at coins or rounds for gold and silver. Explain that to folks. Why would they want to do that?
Well, there's two cool things in particular I'm going to bring up right now, because not only are they silver, not only do they have that cool hedge multiplier of having that pop culture icon, but Valentine's Day is a couple weeks away. So there's several things riding on this one.
Yeah.
We've got that Snoopy holding a Valentine's Day card, and of course, Snoopy, the Peanuts cartoons from Charles Schulz, iconic, so much fun, so many people love those. So even if people don't know what gold and silver is or do any collecting with that, you hand them a silver coin with Snoopy on it, they're pretty much guaranteed to love that one. And then also, Mickey and Minnie, I think they said Mickey and Minnie celebrate their 90-somethingth anniversary this year as a fictional couple there. And so we've got a Mickey and Minnie Mouse cartoon, 1 ounce silver coin, you know, coming around the corner with Valentine's Day. If you wanted to get a nice little light something for Valentine's, that would be a perfect gift for a lot of folks out there. And like you said, very pop culture, not just an ounce of silver. So it's got collectability and silver value on many levels.
What if you want to go heavy for Valentine's Day? How's the jewelry selection looking?
And I got to tell you, we have some beautiful diamond rings. Whether you're looking to pop the question, get a nice engagement ring, maybe upgrade a ring from years past. We've got some absolutely stunning bracelets and necklaces and pendants. We have, for the Alabama fan, we have a huge gold Alabama A with several large diamonds set in that piece. So whether you're looking for a nice little fun gift for one of the, you know, the younger kids in the family, or you're looking for an oh wow gift for that loved one, we have got you covered.
All right. So somebody for some reason has not been by the shop before, give them directions to find you in the real world, and then your online presence, and then talk about, y'all got a great radio show as well.
I sure think we do. Yeah, we're right here in Midtown Mobile, 2204 Government Street. You can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. You can check us out on Instagram or on Facebook as well. And like you were saying, that awesome radio show every Tuesday night on FM Talk 106.5 from 6 to 7 p.m. I think right now we're one of the top four coin shows in the country. Pretty impressive.
Well done. Awesome. 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 I knew that was true. Angelo,
there's more four out there, Sean.
But that was going to ask.
Over 1,500
just
to qualify that.
So it's not four out of four. It's four out of a whole bunch. And it's an awesome show. So y'all check it out. And remember, if you don't catch it live, you can always check the podcast of it out. Angelo, have a great weekend. Tell everybody I said hi.
Will do. You too, my friend.
There he is, Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. I get a couple texts here. And let's see. Oh, okay, Don here. Don said, hey, Sean. So our conversation we just had with Keith Dees, who's got that record alligator gar. But the undercurrent of that story is, you know, being out there with family and tradition and enjoying the Delta, which, yeah, I've been an ambassador for it for a long time. We'll continue, just like Keith. It's an amazing place. Don says, hey, Sean, this reminds me of my younger days when I used to fish for alligator gar with a Meps gold spoon and 8 inches of frayed ski rope. If y'all not heard about this, let me finish his text. But he said they had a knot tied and burnt into it. They put up one heck of a fight, that's for sure. I can't imagine putting a monster like this one in the boat. That fish has to be over 100 years old. The frayed ski rope thing, so y'all, the gar will get their teeth caught in that rope. And so instead of having a hook in them, they basically are fouled up in the, you know, yeah, a rope that starts to fray and has all the little tiny pieces of string and rope that make the rope. They get hung up in that. Don, that's cool. That's some old school. Adam says, this is good. Sean, that interview made me think of the day when I was fishing with my two younger children at the Battery in my 14-foot Stouter. We were on the hook. So let me translate that. That means he was anchored up. We're on the hook, and I had two lines out with live shrimp at the rod holders. I caught something out of the corner of my eye, and then next, a manatee rolled right by the boat. We stayed a little longer then, pulled the anchor, and slowly motored off. I looked at the stern, and I had left a line out. It was bent over, so I reeled it in, and it was a striped bass on my line. Great memory. What a cool thing. You know, Adam, the first, and I need to get... And Dr. Carmichael, Ruth Carmichael from the Sea Lab back on to talk about manatees. Maybe we'll do that as we get back into, you know, when the water starts warming up and they start showing back up in numbers here. But the first one, what I was getting at is that's how I met Dr. Carmichael, because I was in the Tensaw and we were working a bank. I think we had trout fishing. I think we were bass fishing at that point, working a bank, going down. And I just looked down. You know, you do. I threw up there and I just looked down. And the manatee was right by the side of the boat. And I had a moment of, oh, what the heck is that? And I was like, wait, it's gray. That's a dang manatee. And we're up here in the Tensaw River. And, you know, from then on, the numbers people see have increased over the decades. It's a cool thing. They're a special thing to see. But, yes, I had one of those moments as well, Adam. They're quite the deal. And if you get to go to Florida down there and swim with them, but you know, and they're amazing to do down there, but you know they're going to be there. I guess for me, all those years ago up on the Tensaw is the surprise of, holy cow, did that just happen? Sure did. Right. Let's see. Okay. Let's see. Oh, talking about the coin. Hey, y'all are inundating me with coin questions. Call Angelo. I just talked to the guy that knows about them. I don't know about them. I go in there and go, what should I buy? I'm not the guy on that. Hey, you know what? I'll save this. I mean, this story's not going anywhere. Save this, more of this story for next week. What I'm getting at is, I mentioned at the beginning of the show back in the noon hour, read some more. I mean, we all heard about the Brett Favre story, right? And, you know, this idea that this money that was supposed to go for welfare and for what is it, the TANF program and all that, that got redirected, we'll put it this way. For the longest time, it just, the way I heard the story, it was basically focused around Brett Favre. And it still is. But listen to this. This is from a little tease for next week. Says the scandal has ensnared high-profile figures, including retired NFL quarterback Brett Favre, who is one of more than three dozen defendants in a civil lawsuit that the current Human Services Director has filed. This is in Mississippi, to try to recover some of the welfare money wasted when Davis was in charge. Temporary assistance for needy families, that TANF program, money help fund pet projects of the wealthy, including a $5 million for a volleyball arena that Favre supported at his alma mater at Southern Miss. Mississippi Auditor Shad White said that Favre's daughter played volleyball at the school starting in 2017. Another $2.1 million of the TANF money went towards an attempt to develop a concussion drug by a company in which Favre was an investor. This is just the beginning of it. I tell you what, I'm going to pop this up on the Twitter feed if y'all want to read ahead, but we need to get into this next week for sure. All right, coming back to wrap it up here on Midday Mobile. Got some law to talk about, some crazy cases to talk about.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. And glad to see this man back in from Taylor Martino Cowan. Eaton Barnard, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. And we got off in a conversation. I know we talk about different matters of the law and how this affects clients, future clients for you. And we can get into that some, but you were kind of telling stories here of a lifetime. I don't want to date you too much, but you've done this more than a year or two, right? Practice law.
Yeah. You're 36, maybe.
You're 36 years. So over that period of time, the things you must have seen, and you were kind of getting into that. So I said, hey, let's do this on the radio, kind of stories from a life in the world of being an attorney. And these are fascinating. These stories represent obviously something that was big enough to you that you remember and still tell them as a story now.
Yeah. My kids gave me a Yeti cup that's colored. It has Robin Hood on it.
Okay.
Because it's a David and Goliath situation every day where we're representing people who have been injured typically by Goliath.
Right.
And you'd be surprised how often Goliath hides or tries to hide evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Or falsely state evidence, to be honest with you.
And I think that's for people to hear that, they would often go, if they have not been in this situation, of course they don't. That's a big, big company or this big group or whatever. They're doing it all in the up and up. And you're telling me that's not always the truth, Eaton?
Not even close. In fact, they look at it, they see it as a business decision.
Mm-hmm.
I represent clients who've been personally affected and are very emotionally involved. And I get attached to my clients on a personal basis as where the folks who are defending them, and I'm not saying the lawyers, because the corporations a lot of times will not give the information to their lawyers. They'll dole out to their lawyers on an as what they think is needed basis.
Mm-hmm.
So they literally will hide documentation.
From their own legal team.
Yeah. I've seen every form of hiding from documents that completely convicted a company to relatively minor documents, but
How do you get that? But then I've got to ask, you can't reveal all your secrets, but how do you get those documents? If the company's hiding it from their own attorneys, how do you, Eaton Barnard, with Taylor Martino Rowan, get the documents that their own attorneys can't get?
Well, as I told a client one time, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Okay.
And I'm the chief cat skinner. Folks will give information in one case that is not as important as it is in another case. And so we have ways of getting it from other attorneys who've been involved in similar cases where those documents might have given to them collaterally that were not important, but in our case, they're incredibly important.
Gotcha. So it shows up, the documents you need came up in a case from months or years before, and that information wasn't even used maybe specifically in that case,
right?
But it's now out there.
Right. One of the biggest, I guess, most notorious examples is the Ford Motor Company's case where they had a defect in the frame that the old bumper actually, if hit rear-ended, would slice the gas tank in the car.
I remember hearing about this. Yeah.
And the large motor company actually did the economics of paying out on the number of claims. They literally did a mathematical—
Like a cost analysis.
Cost thing. Analysis of what it would take to pay wrongful death claims as compared to recalling all of those millions of cars and replacing that design. And they literally decided it would be more economical to pay the death claims, as they estimated them to be, than to recall the vehicles.
So they knew that this problem was out there.
But they're looking at it and saying, okay, if X number of these vehicles get in an accident, they probably had a percentage of that, then right. it'll cost us less than fixing the problem so people don't get killed.
Right. And then when the more expensive they know it's going to be to them, the more inclined they are to hide, cheat or steal, sneak, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I mean, you've talked about this with me, this kind of these stories from in the trenches of being an attorney for 36 years, where this happens with these big companies, these Goliath companies. And sometimes it's documents, like you said, sometimes it's a person, you know, who may work for that, breaking your way.
True.
Bringing you the truth that the company doesn't want out there.
Well, I'll give you an example is I had a case one time involving a ladder, and the client had fallen off a defective ladder that when he leaned up, the wheel fell out of the ladder, like one of these rolling ladders. Mm-hmm. And so when the ladder came back down, he fell, broke his hip. He was broken really bad. So I asked to do an inspection right away. And the senior lawyer sent a junior lawyer to go do the inspection. Well, I had a videographer there, and we were taking pictures. And you'd raise the ladder up, wheel would fall out. Raise the ladder up, wheel would fall out. So then when we started getting into the litigation, and they hired experts, and they sent the ladder to their experts, we got this report back that said the ladder, nothing wrong with the ladder.
But you got a video that shows differently.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the senior lawyer had forgotten that the junior lawyer went with me, and he didn't.
Oh, wow.
Didn't ask for the video. We'd sent it to them, but they just didn't look at it.
And so they just went on without realizing that you had the truth on this thing.
Oh, yeah. And I had to go all the way to the deposition of the expert of the defendant in Jacksonville, Florida, and show him the video. He had already given a report that said there's nothing wrong with the design of this ladder until I showed him the video.
See, well, there's that wheel.
And he had to completely reverse course, and it was very embarrassing to them. But he was not going to die on the sword of this company that had manipulated the ladder.
You know, I don't know how many details we can get in on the air on this, but you and I also were talking about something that led you to the point that you were it got aggressive, right? Fisticuffs, possibly.
That's happened a couple of times.
Now that's an engaged attorney there. That's going to go. So I mean, what can you give us an example with that? You know, obviously you can't tell us everything. Protecting the people in it, but what led you to one of the times?
Yeah, I had a corporate hotel chain defendant that had an employee who had gotten in a really bad injury situation, and it was it didn't appear on its face to be a good injury, but once again, I sued the corporation, and it was over a device, and I sued the head of maintenance for the local hotel, and then I sued the corporation, and I sent questions directly to the local person, who was a very responsible individual, mm-hmm. and I did it legally. When I filed suit against that person who was in charge of maintenance for the corporation, and I sued the corporation. I sent that person what are called discovery questions, right? They answered the questions.
Right.
They answered them, and their answers were completely opposite of what the corporation answered for the same questions that completely undermined the entire defense.
This is almost like the video where the wheel wall comes out. This is questions that are 180 from the corporation.
Yeah, they're diametrically opposed. It's like a scene out of a movie. When you read one answer that say, was this a safety device? And the local lady who's in charge says, yes. And then you said, did you train these people to treat them as a safety device? She says, yes. Did the person who got hurt tell you that the safety device wasn't working? Yes. And then you see the exact opposite answers from the corporation in their formal responses. There's nowhere to hide.
So how does that then go? You've got them kind of dead to rights here, Eaton. How does that go to possible fisticuffs going South Alabama on them?
Well, because we're required to disclose evidence and not hide evidence from each other, but we are allowed to use evidence to impeach another witness that we don't have to disclose it in advance if it is for impeachment, which means to prove they're lying only.
Okay.
And so in those cases, I just didn't give it to them until it got down to the wire and they found out that I had something. They didn't know what it was that I had. And so a lawyer came into my office and threatened me if I wouldn't give him the evidence. And I said he'd get to see it at trial if he didn't want to settle the case that day. And he got in my face, and that was a mistake.
with probably without knowing what statute of limitations on it. We'll leave it at that.
That's right.
Listen, if you want somebody who's going to roll up his sleeves in many ways and fight for you, his name's Eaton Barnard with Taylor Martina Rowan. How do they get in touch with you?
Call me on my cell phone. 251-604-0400. That's my cell phone. I'll answer that.
His personal cell phone, he just gave it to you, so y'all call him.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Good to see you
again. Thank you, Sean.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.